हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके सो वी हैव परमात्मा संदर्भ अध्याय 3 अधिकरण 4 द ट्रूथ ऑफ द मटेरियल क्रिएशन पेज 70। So the universe is the natural Shakti of Paramatma. That is summarized here. This universe, and even a single atom within it, have no definition without reference to the Supreme Soul. If that were so, then these objects would of similar quality, would probably would be, right? Of similar quality to the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.29. Udriti. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. This universe, famous as being subject to change, and even an atom in it cannot be defined without Paramatma. Everything is Paramatma. The universe is imposed on Paramatma. The illusion of water and a mirage will not take place at all without light. It is all light. The illusion of water is imposed on light. However, some famous objects are perceived as real and spiritual, such as bhakti and things produced by bhakti, or within bhakti and the abodes of the Lord. It is said that the quality of bhakti beyond the gunas is that bhakti which is devoid of other results other than bhakti, and which is unobstructed by other processes. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.29.12. So this point of being able to appreciate, see, is only once we've removed the impersonal understanding, then we can properly understand the, you know, achinta beta beta tattva, how everything is one with the Lord, how it's simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. Because otherwise we see is that we make the mistake is where it's one, we'll say it's different, and where it's different, we'll say it's one, right? It means ourselves as an individual, the Lord as an individual, and that rasa aspect that's there, we'll say, no, that's one. Then where, you know, we're small and just a part and parcel of Krishna, we're dependent upon the Lord as every atom in the universe is, that's where we'll say we're different. So we see is that the mundane philosophy, because it's based on vidya, it's always backwards, right? Means the reflection has elements that look like and mechanically work like, but the tendency it's backwards. So that's the point is that, like you see here, is that, you know, that which is done spontaneously then tends to take one a bit away from Krishna, while in the spiritual world that spontaneity takes one towards Krishna, right? So now we're able to appreciate this point, because then if you get down to it, then you can, then it's just how you're going to see the person everywhere. This is not an appreciation of how the Lord, you know, is just, you know, all expanding everywhere and everything is him. And so that greatness and that, this is how he, the person, everything's based on the person. That's the important element that's here, you know, because the aspect of how he's everything and spreading everywhere, that was dealt with in Paramatma, I mean, in Bhagavat Sandarbha, you know, how he's the absolute truth. That's the feature. But here it's based on the person, but not as in its Bhagavan feature, because you don't require Bhagavan feature to run all this. But the point is since Paramatma is localized, the personal feature is there. It's just he's not manifesting all qualities to run it. Therefore, then Bhagavan, where he interacts in rasa, right? Because here is that you're looking at the aspect of tattva on how everything is Krishna. And so then, but the same time is, we see is that these advanced personalities, then they're able to see that, but in the context of rasa, right? Because Krishna, his that aspect of that oneness with everything, that is the aspect of he's tasting the rasa of everything's his. It doesn't mean that, you know, so the oneness is it's all his. That's the possession is the oneness. Now, what is possessed also being individual then has consciousness and has therefore also that aspect of rasa. And then that aspect of rasa being expressed, that makes the second feature of rasa, right? So Krishna, it's all encompassing. That's the first, that's his. The second will be then the individual living entities and their perception of Krishna in this rasa, right? Because this works when you understand it's all Krishna. Then perceiving that aspect, then you're going to see everything in context of Krishna, right? We're not talking mundane rasa here, because mundane rasa, you're seeing the material energy and your relationship with it, and therefore the rasa that you get from it without Krishna. But we're talking about this is with Krishna. And so then whatever is there, you see that in the context of your particular attraction to Krishna, right? Whatever particular rati, you'll interpret everything in that context. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say a child, because they have that taste of just spontaneously playing. So they're going to see the whole creation as what they can play with. Right? And so they'll look at something, and if it's something they can play with, it becomes the point of their focus. And if it's something they can't play with, they'll just ignore it. Right? So it's all about playing. Right? And so therefore we see as Mother Jashoda, she'll see everything in the context of, taking care of Krishna as her son. The cowherd boys will see everything in the context of Krishna and how they can also play. Right? The gopis will see it in the context of their relationship. So everything has some connection in some way. And those things that don't, those aren't areas of perception. That's why you see as you have, the Vishaya has particular qualities. He has unlimited qualities, but due to the relationship, you see particular qualities. Right? And then as Udipan, then there's particular qualities. So some of them are the same qualities, and some of them are specific for that particular rasa. Right? And so therefore, then you're going to see the universe according to your values. So what you see, that's seen in context of Krishna, that's Krishna consciousness. Right. If what you see, some of it you see connected to Krishna, some of it you don't, you see it for your own purpose or this or that, that will be mixed. And where you just see whatever is here according to your conditioning and values, then whatever you're seeing fits into your context of your identity and what you can gain from it, then that's material. Right. So you're going to have this aspect where it's about by your values, just like here in the spiritual world, it's the rati, it's that attraction for Krishna. But in the material world, it will be your conditioning by your values. You have a particular value, you therefore have a particular conditioning. And that will have particular senses and everything. So then from the pramana chaitanya, you know, aspect of the consciousness, you will only see certain things. You just can't see other things. Because there's no interest. So in other words, you can only see according to your value, right? So that's your identity. That's what you want to gain. That's where your attraction, your attachment. And so that is then how the Pramana Chaitanya will be manifest, right? The particular body. While in the spiritual body, then that's based on the particular rati you have for Krishna, right? And so then that aspect, then that attraction, then you can move forward in that aspect. So you're going to see so many things, but you'll see those things that are in connection with your rasa, right? And then the environment that it's in, you know, as much as is necessary. And so, for the individual, that's sufficient. They're satisfied with that. They don't need to see more, right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like for us, we see a smooth wall, right? But for the bug or the spider, they see a wall full of holes, right? You know, just the right size for them that they can put their feet in and climb up the wall, you know, kind of like the ceiling there, you know, so they can go up the wall. For us, it's smooth. We can't go up the wall. So that's the whole point. For us, it's not necessary to see that detail, but for the bug, it is. Like that. So everyone's going to see accordingly. So this whole point of being able to see how everything is Krishna, it's based on Krishna, like that. Without a reference to Krishna, it doesn't have any meaning. So for the purified soul, the pure devotee, that is then the standard. There's nothing else. There isn't some other way of seeing. There's not another way that they want to see. But you know, if one has that impersonal impurity, then we'll think, yes, it's all right to see everything as one, but they're seeing it not connected to the person. They're not seeing it based on the person. So that's useless, because it's not like that. Even if you say, yes, it's the material world is based on Brahman, but what's Brahman based on? Krishna. So therefore, you see the world connected to Krishna. So the basis is Krishna, because otherwise you have the thing and then its immediate basis is some material object around you. You know, you're sitting here because of the house. House is sitting on the ground. Ground is sitting in air. Air is like this, but ultimately it's all sitting on the Lord, like that. So when that appreciation is there, then we can see how all this connects to Krishna, whatever you're dealing with. So therefore, you don't have any difficulty in balancing devotional life with the practical life going on around you, right? Or the mechanistic life around you, is because those aspects on how you can connect it to Krishna, that's used. And those that don't, you don't use. You know, it's easy. It's not like a rocket science. Let's say you're walking down the street, you're trying to get somewhere, and you are planning, you know, to turn left. And then, you know, after on the next block, you're going to turn left. When you get to the street after that, you're going to turn right, you know, and then down at the end, at the next street, it's on the corner, right? Because, you know, you like walking that way. It's a pleasant walk. But when you get to that corner, you see the road is full of people and cars, and it's insane. But straight is not. So you just walk straight and then turn left and you're there. Instead of turning left and then right, you just go straight and then turn left. So it's not like it's a whole, you know, existential thing on, you know, what is there, and well, we're just being practical Prabhu, and, you know, like this and that. No, it's like, no, you just, what works for Krishna consciousness, that's what you're doing. But you're seeing Krishna consciousness. You're not seeing your own perspective on its own. Your perspective in context of Krishna. Because there is no reference to our context, except if Krishna is there. There's no Krishna. There is no reference. It's mundane. Right. Does this make some sense? Yeah. Okay. The Lord says, Mat Sevaya Tu Nirguna. Faith in my devotional service is purely transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-27. He has also said, Mam Nikake, Ni Tekam Tu Nirgunam, Nirguno Mad Apashrayaha, and Man Nishta Nirgunam Smritam. My abode is beyond the gunas. The devotee is beyond the gunas. Knowledge of the Lord is beyond the gunas. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-26, 24, and 25. All objects related to bhakti are beyond the gunas. Gopal Tapani Upanishad. So if you're seeing things not based on the Lord, then you're dealing with the gunas. You see it based on the Lord, you know, then, just in the rules and regulations and this, or liberation, the aspects like that, then it'll be in the mode of goodness. But when you see it in devotion connected to the Lord, then it's bhakti. The same view. It could be, because the Lord being beyond the gunas, if you see things, everything based on the Lord, how you're seeing is not controlled by the gunas. It's beyond the gunas. So it's very simple. It's simply a matter of vision. So that's why the aspect of it's all illusion and all that, because seeing it not connected to the Lord, that's the illusion. That is there. That's real. That it can function and give results, that's real. And the results are real, right? But the point is that if you don't see it connected to the Lord, you're an illusion because you're not seeing things as they are. Right? You know, it'd be just like, let's say, you go to visit some very respectable person. You know, you go to their house, you've gone with a few persons, maybe some friends or something. And you've been, okay, invited in and asked to sit in the, you know, in that front room where sitting, you know, nice, comfortable and everything like this. And the man will be down soon, right? So then you're sitting there and joking and laughing and, you know, just being, you know, friendly how you are amongst yourselves. And then those who are, you know, facing the proper direction, appropriate direction, they can see that the man is coming. So then they stand up. But the one who has his back to the person, he just goes on laughing and joking and this and that and making comments and why you guys are standing, you know, you look like idiot and all this stuff. And then the man is like there and they're just sitting there standing and he's just going and goes, oh, he's right behind me, right? You know, so that kind of thing, that's what's going on. Because so, in other words, he's continuing. It's not that it's not the situation that he's in, the couch and his friends and all that, and they're in the house. It's not real. But his perception of it and how he's dealing with it, that's where the illusion is. Right? So he's not seeing things as they are. So if you're not seeing it in the context of how it's Krishna, we're not seeing it how it is. And to that degree, then there may be some mix of the modes. So we're doing something appropriately directed by the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then that activity itself is not going to be governed by the modes. And we, depending on consciousness, there may be some modes involved or not, but we're going to get the spiritual benefit. But how much we're involved in the modes, then, you know, there'll be some response of that also. You know, it's just like, let's say you're doing something, and let's say you're very, very experienced in doing an activity. And when you're doing the activity, something goes wrong. Right? So without skipping a beat, you just immediately make an adjustment to accommodate that. You know, you don't get into a whole thing like that. Let's say you pull out one of the knives, you go to cut, you find it's dull, you just put it down, pull out another knife and start cutting. Right? It doesn't stop, right? But now let's say someone who's not as experienced or this or that, or they're more attached and all that, then they'll go, oh man, this knife's dull, this is so crazy, I got so much, they'll just make a whole emotional scene out of it. Right? So that's the whole point, is that one has to be very, very aware that these advanced devotees don't get upset because they know what the goal is. To them, it's not the details of what they're working with. What they're working with is important because of its ability to get you that result you want, but it doesn't have an importance more than that. But it's personal because they're focused on Krishna, right? While you may see in the material world, there'll also be those who are nicely situated in their work and can work and see nothing as an obstacle and see everything in that way. But it's impersonal because it's just about themselves. So therefore, all the people they work with, all the workers, anybody they work with, situations, it doesn't, they don't care, because it's not about a relationship with anything. And so then how they deal and everything, they don't necessarily, you know, they'll follow the etiquettes, but it's not, it's superficial. Is this meaning anything? Yeah. So in other words, we're trying to see is that there's a switch in the presentation. Well, as you clear everything, now you can see it. You're taking it each time up slowly, step by step, that how now everything being based on the Lord, and by it being based on the Lord, Lord's unaffected, right? And he's in control, but through his Shaktis, right? And it's because he's real, it's real. And it functions, it has its reference to Krishna because it's coming from Krishna. So it doesn't have its own reference, right? And so without having its own reference, then we can't impose upon it a reference that we would like, right? Because that's generally what we do, is that we take something out of its original context and then now put a new definition on it, right? If it's in the traditional context, seen in that way, it's supposed to be used in a certain way. But if we take it out of that context and just make it ordinary, or just, you know, reset it, then we can very nicely now put a new context. So when we talk about this modern kind of methodology, that's all that's happening. Niyamagraha, all they're doing is taking it out of its traditional context, giving it a new context, and therefore now they feel they have they're in the position of authority to now give it a new definition. That new definition means how it's dealt with, how it works, how it's everything. Right? You know, it's just like, okay, you have George Washington, great guy, father of the country, you know, all this, that, blah, blah. But then, you know, oh, but he had slaves on his plantation. So therefore now so you take it out, and having slaves is bad. Therefore he's a bad guy. Therefore now I don't have to deal with him. Right? You know, not that, and he's the bad guy, rather than, oh, all of your benefits and all that were based off of slavery. You know, so therefore, you know, is your position actually correct? Because based on that, that's how it built up. You know, but you know, no, we're squeaky clean. He's the bad guy. And so now we can redefine it, now deal in a completely different way. So this is the thing, is that we will take something out of a context. We'll make something that's not as important. Something that's more important, we'll make less important. Or we'll just shift the definitions completely, so that something that's important, we make it more important than it is. You know, it's just like at a meal, right? You have all the elements of the meal, and then there's the dessert. But for the kids, the dessert's the most important thing. So they've kind of taken it out of proportion. So like that, you get funny things. Yeah. Yes.
When you mentioned about the different vision, see according to Krishna or not, you know, can you say also that it's also when you mentioned to see, it's also involving to hear in a different way.
Involving
the senses, hear
the senses,
like that.
Oh, hear
in a different way.
Means the sound vibration will be the same, but it's a matter of what you value. So what you hear, you know, it's just like, let's say we're sitting in the temple, yes, right, and the class is going on, right, and it's been a busy program, so the temple is very full, so we're sitting more towards the back, you know, next to the door, we're leaning on the wall of the door, right? Now the class is going on, that sound is there, But you also, out in the courtyard, there's the sound of opening some doors, right? So now, what does our mind catch? The words of the Bhagavatam, or that the Mahashop is open?
Maybe Mahashop.
Yeah. And then you say, I'm sitting so far back, I could see me sitting underneath the tree and, you know, and eating some Mahabhashad and listening to the class, you know, so. You know, you're expanding your service, you know, instead of just only hearing, I could be hearing and honoring Prashad also. So it's a matter of what you select, right? Because that's going to be, that's what we mentioned about, is that that's what then the manas, so the Pamitra Chaitanya, that's what it does. The Pramana Chaitanya is the ability to perceive and the ability to analyze things. Right? But you can perceive so many things, you can analyze so many things. So that's a mechanical point. So what you can actually do, but which ones you'll do, right? Then that is done based on our impressions, right? So then those things will come in the senses into the mind, into the manas. But then that's this manas is what deals with the senses. But the Pramitri Chaitanya is what's dealing with what you value. You know, that's, you say the consciousness, the heart, you know, like that. And so then you're going to choose out of those two, you know, the class or the Mahabhashad, right? So that's what's going to be happening. So that's the whole thing, is when you see things connected to Krishna, then you're going to choose in connection with Krishna. I mean, if it's pure devotional service, like Kamsa sees everything connected to Krishna, but he doesn't see it favorably towards Krishna. He's just seeing how I'm benefiting or losing. So he's Krishna conscious, but it's not pure because it's not about Krishna, it's about himself, right? While then with Krishna, I mean, with the pure devotee, then they're going to see that connected to Krishna and how it's favorable to Krishna and without any karma gyan for yourself. Yeah, does that make sense? So it's a matter of vision. So Prabhupada says, it's not that the pure devotee doesn't see, you know, the trees and the land and the cow walking by, but they don't see any of it not connected to Krishna. So in that way, they only see Krishna. But they see all the individual items, but they see how does that connect to Krishna, you know, in some way or another, either as service or as appreciation or remembrance of something, or, you know, in some way it'll be connected. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that the psychological process is then brought into that. If the value is Krishna, you analyze everything in connection with Krishna, right? So therefore, then whatever you see, you'll analyze it connected to Krishna. And that means then you're going to perform activities that are always connected with Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Maharaj?
Yes.
And what's the short position? There's Pramana Chaitanya, Pramita Chaitanya, and what's the short position?
Vishaya. I always want to say Vikara, but Vishaya Chaitanya. That means the mind takes on the form of what you're seeing. Like you're looking at an apple, if you focus on it, your mind actually takes the shape of an apple. You know? So that's the thing, is it actually takes that shape. And so therefore, then now that's the point of focus. So by Pramana Chaitanya, you're able to see it. By the Vishaya Chaitanya, the mind, I mean, then the how you say, the mind looking at the memory, then, you know, takes on that shape by based on What's of value to you? Because all these things, I mean, we're trying to show a linear thing, but at the same time, they're all going on at once, right? But we kind of show a linear that you're going to see things. The mind, by accessing the memory, then sees what's the previous experience with this. If it's good, like apples are good, then now it will take that form of the apple. Then now the intelligence will analyze, you know, that we have an apple here. And so what can we do with apples? And then so many things have been gone through the mind, you know, of what goes with apples. And then, you know, if apples, working with apples is within one's identity, then one will decide to interact with the apple, right? So you see is that there is a natural linear thing, but the point is the ability to analyze is what means your ability to see, right? If you can't tell the difference between things and what's similar, you can't see things, right? I can't see a wall unless I can see the bricks in them are all connected. They are similar. And I can't see the wall if I can't see that the wall is different from the ground or a tree. So I have to be able to analyze to see, right? But at the same time is it's just generic. Then the mind, by our samskaras, will decide, okay, we are going to focus on this apple, right? So taking that form, now it's all about the apple. Now the Pramana Chaitanya is going to be dealing with it, analyzing how it's used, right? First, it's just its existence. Now it's its use and goals, right? Then, and that will be according to the samskaras. So we see the samskaras are working throughout. The mind is working. Vishaya Chaitanya is working throughout. The Pramana Chaitanya is working throughout. And then the mind, intelligence, and false ego, they're always at play because you're always going to see things according to your identity. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And so then it's going to be the same mechanics are there. You take, like we say, you take an apple, hold it out in front of the nose of a dog. They'll come forward. They see it. They'll smell it. And then they'll turn away. You hold that in front of the nose of a cow. Then they'll smell it like that. And then they'll stick out their tongue to grab it. Right? You hold that same apple in front of the nose of a horse. You know, he'll flare out his nostrils. He'll smell it. And then you have to watch out for your fingers because horses' teeth are very sharp. You know, that's why when people hold things out for horses, they hold them out flat like this. So they bite from the top. You hold it like this, they'll bite your hand along with it. Right. So they're all going to, according to their identity, their experiences, they're going to therefore interact with it, but they're all seeing it. They're all analyzing it. Then they're all looking at the history of it and their memory and then or what their identity then and values, then they deal with it. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you. Are we taking those from yoga? Where we take those positions from?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains them, but the specific names, I'm not sure. Do you know, Halidhar?
Maharaj, this is from Patanjali Yoga Sutras. This is three stages of cognition.
Okay, so it must be from yoga. You know, so in other words, whichever of the schools has analyzed these things and come up with a very nice definitions and working models, then that school is what we use. Because the point is it's all part of the different things. So this is mechanically how it's working. But now why it's working like that, then why the mind works, how it does the intelligence, how it does the ego, how it does, then we see from Shankhya by what modes they're coming from. Right? But ultimately it's all from bhakti and that how it's reflecting. Because as you see is now we can see how everything is Krishna, how it's all one. And you see that Prabhupada so many times is using this term sarvam kalvidam brahma, that it's all Krishna. But he's using it in this context that is being mentioned here, that nothing has any definition without reference to Krishna. You can't define something without its reference to Krishna. Right? That's the problem in the material world. It's defined not connected to Krishna. Therefore, the definition keeps changing and adjusting. The value, the use, it keeps evolving. Well, if it's connected to Krishna, then it doesn't change. There may be variety, but it doesn't change. So that's the whole thing, is we're looking for the eternal, but at the same time, is because we're using the mundane approach, we're not seeing everything in context of the eternal. Therefore, we deal with everything in the temporary state. And when it doesn't work, we try the different variety to try to get that eternal taste, right? While on the spiritual platform, you see the thing, and then you see it in context of Krishna, you use it in that context. At the same time, as the variety of how you can use it still remains, right? So you have the unlimited, you have the eternal, but you also still have the variety. So the impersonalist idea of variety is mundane. That's only because of them seeing it not connected with the absolute. So that's why it's so important. We saw before that Satkaryavad, how everything is connected to the absolute, and it's connected to the absolute. Okay, then that means, but it's connected by Shakti Parinamavad, right? Because otherwise, Brahma Parinamavad, then it breaks down the proper definition. So you have to be, those main definitions have to be, as you expand, they have to be able to be maintained. So you have a Chinta Beda Beda Tattva. And so then that, then makes the Satkaryavad, how everything therefore is connected. And then how it's connected in that variety. And so then it's the Shakti is what's transforming. So you just get that natural, the point. Because otherwise, without that, then you come up with some fault. Some fault will be there in the Lord or the living entity. There's going to be, it's not going to work out properly. So that's why then we see Jiva Goswami has, gone to so much detail to remove these doubts so we can see things very nicely. Because now we're, due to our conditioning, we tend to see it from our perspective, but now we're starting to see things, how it actually connects with Krishna. So by that samasthi aspect, then we're able to appreciate that, my mundane view of Vyasti is not of importance. I may work with it, but it's not actually the absolute understanding, the samasthi is. Now, once I get to that platform, then I can start to, within that, appreciate the personal aspect of the Lord, living entities, and that, and his energies. Then I can start to see it from, both at once, about my view on that, I am who I am, an individual, I am servant of the Lord, and Krishna being the supreme enjoyer, and he's an individual. Then you can combine the two, where I, as an individual, am doing activities to please the Lord. Right? So it just naturally comes across that once you get rid of the mundane, impersonal, and karma and jnana, those visions, then you can look at it with the proper vision of you as an individual and Krishna as an individual and how you interact. Does that make sense? So that's why then all philosophies other than pure Vaishnavism is always going to be tainted with I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? Because they don't properly see their position. I'm small and this and that, but at the same time, I'm big. And all. No, the Chinta Beda Veda Tattva is not about yourself. It's how you connect with the Supreme, not how everything connects with you. Right? So mundane, they try to use the Chinta Beda Veda Tattva, that everything's connected with me. That's why, and because it's inconceivable, that's why you can't understand why on one way I use the logic one way, and another I use it the opposite way, because it's about myself. And so as long as everything is about my happiness, then everything is reconciled, right? There are no problems. The only problem is everybody else in the universe doesn't see it this way. So therefore, I'm going to try to convince others, you know, and that may or may not work, but at least I can probably find a few friends that there's aspects we have in common. So therefore, then, you know, it's workable. Is that okay? Yeah. So therefore, we put all those together. So it's not just yoga on its own. We'll have the Shanti aspect is there, but it's based on this principle of how everything comes from. And Krishna, you know, he is the Paramatma Sandarbha, is how everything's based on Paramatma. So that's the most important understanding of how you're using the mind, all these three aspects of consciousness. So therefore, our ability to perceive, how we are valuing things, what is our identity, how we're engaging the senses, how we're analyzing things, that's all based on how it's founded in Paramatma. While Patanjali won't get to that detail. So even though we say, but he gets the detail more than us, no, we just use those terminologies because they're nicely placed. Just like we're speaking, we use the English words that people use. You know, they say inductive, deductive. We use the words. Why do we have to make up our own words? Right? Because that kind of understanding is already there in the original. Right? The original is deductive. And then there's people cannot follow that. So therefore, they get the inductive. Right? So the deductive is the positive. The inductive is the negative. It's just the reverse. It's the reflection. Is that... Right. So in this, sometimes it's thought, these are all more technical. No, they're not. They're just getting down to detail that you can use it in detail. In other words, they're absorbed in detail. They have nice definitions for detail. We use them. But as far as principle goes, other than pure Vaishnavism, they have no idea what they're talking about. I mean, just like flat out, no idea. Because they're talking about things that they say are principle, which are not. They're talking about detail, you know, that they don't understand how it relates, what principle it's going back to. They may have some idea because they're taking from the Vedas, but their interpretation of it will always be tainted because they're dealing in avidya. So much of the time they don't take things far enough, they get things backwards, but they may be using useful points. So therefore, then we will take these things from there. You know, just like the point of Shabda, that's very nicely explained by Shankaracharya. You know, when you talk about, you know, I don't remember the words for it, but when you conceive of something within the mind that you want to say, there's a feeling, then that resonates in the first chakra of nod, where there's the primordial aspect of sound. Then that moves up, then that has the aspect of energy, right? In the second chakra, the third chakra, then it takes on an action, right? Because you can't do action without energy, right? But the action can't take place unless there's an actual object performing the action. So when it gets to the heart level, then it takes on the form of a noun, you know, an object. Then when it gets to the throat, then you speak. So that line and that and the names for it and all that, that will be coming. Shankaracharya explains that. You know, so someone does a just like logic, we use nyaya, even though it's the lowest of the philosophies. But, you know, everybody uses nyaya. When it comes to logic, that was all he focused on, and he did a nice job. So why is that? Because they always have these six sages. They're always going to come up with these philosophies. And Krishna, therefore, then, you know, reveals to them how to reveal these particular aspects of the, you know, Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva as their own separate philosophies. And then everybody else uses it. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Yes, thank
you. Okay, so then continuing with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport. What we did.
Gopal Tapani Upanishad, Maharaj.
Yes. Gopal Tapani Upanishad says, Tasham Madhye Sakshad Brahma Gopala Purihi. Among them, the abode of Gopal is Brahman. Sachidanandaika Rase Bhakti Yoge Tishtati. The Lord resides in bhakti, filled with eternity, knowledge, and bliss. The planet of the Lord and bhakti yoga are beyond the gunas and thus the highest truth. That is explained in this verse. If it is defined as being beyond the gunas, it is chit sama, the same chit. Paramatma is beyond the gunas. Since all these objects are the expansions of Paramatma, they are the one Paramatma, Atmavat. They're him, means they're his energies. You know, they're not him identically, because that means that they're not unlimited. He is unlimited. He is the basis of everything else. The other things are based on him. So then, like that, you have to be able to see they're one, at the same time they're different. Right? You can't call them the same, but you can't call them different, right? So that aspect where we're just saying it's one and different and then being able to work with it, then that's, you know, we're comfortable with that. And we can function in that way because you're dealing with the platform of pure devotional service. Ramanujacharya, because in the environment he's preaching in, then so much of the impersonal philosophy and that's there. Therefore, he has to, it's the same thing, but he's stepping back a bit to, you know, it's one, but it's not one. It's different, but it's not different. So you can't say that they're different. You can't say they're one. He's like that because he's working with, as soon as you say one, oh, it's this. No, no, no. You know, oh, it's that. Oh, it's that. Like that. So he has to try to balance. And those that would catch that, then they became Sri Vaishnavas. They move forward in their devotional life. Those that still wouldn't catch it, they're, you know, it was too subtle for them. Then Madhvacharya comes along and say, it's two. And then you don't even have to worry about that subtlety. And then, you know, and then he catches, you know, whoever's left. Right? Yeah. Okay, back to the what do you call it? Sarva Sambad. No, this is the Anucheda. Though manifested, kya yamanaha. Even a slight transformation, universe, cannot be defined as independent of Paramatma. Pratyag Atmanam, what is stated is oneness. If it exists without Paramatma, the universe would be equal to his spiritual form, self-manifesting, internal, like Paramatma, Atmavat. Means if it's not based on Paramatma, then it would be its own thing. It could manifest itself. It can exist without the Lord. So therefore, then you have this point is that that doesn't happen. It's based on the Lord, because otherwise the same Brahman is everything. But if the Shakti is functioning on its own and the cause is not Brahman, therefore then that means the Shakti is independent and is equal to Brahman. And maybe it transforms and you get this material energy, which is inferior. But the point is the Shakti that is based on is the same as the Lord, if you take their philosophy. So that's why the point is it's one with the Lord. It's non-different from him. It has to be him. He's the basis. Right? It's very important that aspect. Because however they want to juggle it, but the point comes down to if Brahman's not, you know, and then they'll say, okay, Brahman transformed. But then the point is, how does Brahman become that? Brahman can transform. Same time this transformation is there, it has to be based on Brahman. Therefore, Brahman has to have Shaktis. So they leave out Brahman has Shaktis. So there's Brahman and there's Shakti, and then Shakti becomes the material world, right? So they don't catch that aspect. They, you know, it's Brahman, then there's Shakti. Okay, Shakti becomes the material world. Or Brahman becomes the material world. No, Brahman has Shakti. Shakti becomes the material world. Right? So as soon as you add in Brahman has Shakti, now you don't have a problem. Right? Okay. Riti. Some people claim that if Paramatma is the material cause, the duality of material upadis would also apply to him, right? Anyways, we've dealt with this before, but now there's some slight new angle on it. You know, we're putting mustard instead of ketchup or something, you know, or mayonnaise, you know, like this. And so therefore it's all different. It's completely different. You know, it's not pommes frites anymore, because instead of using mayonnaise, we used ketchup. You know, it's like, you know, no, it's the same thing, right? Some people, okay. The next Anucheda negates this by stating that the Lord is without duality and is only due to ignorance that people perceive duality in the absolute, right? Anucheda 80. If there's no change without Paramatma, Paramatma cannot be said to be devoid. This is their doubt. So this is Shamsha. Quote, if there's no change without Paramatma, Paramatma cannot be said to be devoid of upadis. Does that state of absence of upadis exist? Right? So now, where is that state of no upadis? Because if everything's based on the Lord and all that, then he becomes controlled by these upadis. So where is that state that's beyond the upadis? Because the Upanishads mention you have to go beyond upadi. So then they're saying, see, is then you're saying Brahman or Paramatma. So therefore, Brahman, Paramatma, they're affected by this. And so that can't be. So where's the state? So they're saying it can't be connected to them because they're trying to establish that point there, that Brahman is beyond the modes. But they think that if he's connected with it, then he has to be involved. But they don't see his notes, his energies. Nahi satyasya nanatvam avidvan yadi manyate nanatvam chiradror yadvaj jyotishor vatayor iva. There is no material reality, duality. There's no material duality in the absolute truth. If a person thinks there is duality, he is ignorant, like seeing space within two pots as different space, or two lamps as different fire, or two pranas in one body as different prana, when actually there is only one space, one fire, and one prana. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.30. Right? You see one pot and another pot, and there's an empty space. You think, oh, two different spaces. But space is one entity that is pervading everything. Same with fire. Fire is one thing. It happens to be manifest in two places, but it's still one fire. Right? Is that... Udriti, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. How does one conceive of oneness? There is no duality in the supreme truth. If one considers duality in the absolute, one is ignorant. An ignorant person on seeing two pots with cavities thinks the first pot has some space in it and the other pot has different space in it. Similarly, on seeing two lamps, an ignorant person thinks that the first lamp, one is fire, and the second lamp, a different fire, or on seeing prana in one body and another body, he will think that it is different prana. Right? So that's all. They're ignorant if they don't actually understand what is air, what is prana, what is fire. You know, I mean, ether. So then, that's the point. The Vaishnavas see it properly. And because they are in those illusions, then they want to reconcile those illusions with what the Shastra says. So they come up with their own philosophies. But the point is, we have to see it how the acharyas give us. Then we're able to perceive. Yes? No? Okay. There is no variety in Paramatma, satyasya. If you think there is variety, you are ignorant, avidvan. Like seeing the difference, nanatvam, between the sky and the great sky and in a pot. Difference between light in the sky and in a room, or air outside and inside the body. Right? So, it's all connected with Paramatma. So there's no variety, meaning that there's this Paramatma or that Paramatma. There's just Paramatma. And so it's all Paramatma. But at the same time, as it being his energies, it may have the variety. So the energy has the variety, but Paramatma is one. And the energy is non-different from him. So he and all those varieties are the same also. They're all him. Right, they're not separate from him. They don't have a separate existence from him. Right, so when we're looking at it, one fire and another fire, we don't understand there's the principle of fire that they're both based on. So the variety is all based on Paramatma. Therefore, it all has that same point of oneness, that it's all connected with the Lord. It's all him. Yeah. Okay. Vritti, having asserted that the variety of the material world doesn't imply duality in the Lord. The next Anucheta further illustrates this point through an example. Just like gold is known by various names as earring, bracelet, necklace, etc., owing to various types of manufacturing, similarly, the Lord is described by various words by different types of men. Anucheta 81. Since nothing can exist without Paramatma, Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.29, all words describe Paramatma. That is explained with an example. Just as gold is perceived in different forms of various types of manufacturing in the ordinary world, the Supreme Lord, inaccessible to material senses, is described in various words, both ordinary and Vedic, by different types of men. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.31. Right? Gold is known by many different names in the form of gold earrings and bracelet. Similarly, the Lord is expressed by all words, both secular and Vedic. It is said, Sarva Nama Bhideyas Cha Sarva Vede Ditas Cha Saha. The Lord is worshipped by all names in the Vedas, Skanda Purana. So this point is when you see it all back to there, then there's no bewilderment, because then how does it connect to the Lord? That is seen. And then how you connect to the Lord, that's seen. What is your relationship with the Lord is seen. What's your relationship with this material energy is seen. Then based on your relationship with the Lord and the material energy, you'll engage in the Lord's service, right? So that aspect is then what's there. So all the, even the secular words, you call it a car, but that car, that it's a vehicle, and that it can, take someone, from point A to point B, that potency, that principle, that's Paramatma. It's not something else. So all the words that are there, they're all Paramatma, whether they're Vedic or not Vedic, whether they're just ordinary words, it doesn't matter. What it is, like the kids, they bump their elbow, then they have a boo-boo. That's their word. Nobody else says boo-boo. So the point is that it doesn't matter. It's the same principle. It's the same thing. It doesn't matter. No, it's different because it's different. Then this is all an illusion. This is all an ignorance. Is that everything is the Lord and nothing is separate from him, right? So now we're just one by one trying to establish. And then once you see, then you come to the point of how you can see everything in connection with Krishna and Vrindavan. Right? Like that. So this is the end of Adhikarana 4.
Maharaj.
Okay.
Maharaj, yes. Can we say that the study of the Paramattha Sandarbha is like a step to study Bhagavan?
Yes, because the next Sandarbha will be Krishna Sandarbha, right? So in other words, Bhagavat Sandarbha is about how Krishna is expanded everywhere in his impersonal feature as Brahman.
Yes.
Then Paramatma Sandarbha is about how the Lord has expanded as Paramatma and how the whole creation is based on him and he's controlling it. Because as Brahman, he is it, but he controls it as Paramatma.
Yes.
Right? But where does this existence of and control of come from? It comes from the desire of Bhagavan. So slowly, step by step, we're being taken up. So it's a very thorough study. It means you won't get any more thorough study than this. You can say, no, there's, in the university, we studied, and that's all nonsense. Means there is no greater scholarship than what Jiva Goswami has given. Others may have a great volume of material, but it doesn't mean that they're saying anything. Like that. It that's not there. So this scholarship, you see its effectiveness, how it can take you from one position to the next, how it can take you forward. That becomes the important thing, is that how he takes you step by step. He's analyzed this on how to get through. You're presenting the deductive understanding to the inductive mind. How to do that to take you through, step by step, that you think you're inductively going up.
Yes.
But at the same time as you're going up according to how deductive comes down. In other words, deductive extends down. If you follow that inductively up, then, you know, by the potency of the deductive with faith in, you'll get back to the deductive view. Because once you go, you're here, you go up, but now this much you see deductively. Yes. Then you get up to here, now you see this much deductively. Until yes. some point you can start to see deductively.
Yes.
Do you
yes.
understand? So how he's giving, well, actually the deductive step by step analytically comes down. No one else does that to that degree. They'll take one part. Shankya will take, okay, we have this mode in this, we get this element, that becomes this, or this quality goes into this, that goes into that. You know, everybody gives a part like that. And it's enough for us to work. But we see Jiva Goswami has taken the whole thing, put it all together, and shown exactly where everything goes. Therefore, he said he's the greatest scholar in the modern, you know, contemporary era. You know, and when you say contemporary, it means non-Vedic. And when does the non-Vedic start? You know, the way it means in the last, you know, some thousand years. So it means there is no greater scholar than him. That's the basic point. Because, you know, you don't, everybody, somebody has to do this and it's done, right? The practical point you're going to use this is going to be then, you know, in Nectar Devotion, you know, your Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, that, but this is explaining what is that knowledge that's being given in these scriptures and how it comes together so there's no doubt. Because you see, as you go along, any kind of distraction in devotional service, being either karma or jnana, comes back to the points that are being made by Jiva Goswami. They're not going out of that. It's not that, oh, we're modern, we're Westerners, we think different, we come. No, you function under the modes. There may be a bit more, it may be predominantly ignorance with a touch of passion. And now and again, when you want to talk about butterflies or being vegan, you know, you might so-called have some goodness. But the whole point is you're just dealing with ignorance. So there's nothing there. So these Indian scholars, they're dealing with much more. They're dealing with goodness than with some passion or ignorance in them. It's not pure goodness, right? But this, now you're dealing, you know, on the platform of pure goodness, but you're discussing what's beyond pure goodness. So it's actually the most developed.
Yes.
Is that good? Yeah.
Yes,
ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay. Summary of Adhyaya. This Adhyaya substantiated the nature and function of the illusory energy of the Lord and her relationship with the Lord. The first Adhikarna described how Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord, through her various energies, causes bewilderment and engages the conditioned jivas in the material activities. Right. The second Adhikarna proved that the Supreme Lord is the material and efficient cause of the universe through the principle of Shakti Parinama, which establishes that the universe is the transformation of the Lord Shakti and thus has a real existence. The third Adhikarna substantiated that the material energy is only an amsha of the Lord and thus it can't function independent of him. And the universe can be understood as real only by those who respect and worship Paramatma, not by others, right? In other words, only devotees can actually understand. It means even if they're not so developed in devotees, they can appreciate this. So anyone who can appreciate this, that means there has some, means there's some devotional element there. They may be samanya, they may be ordinary, but there's some devotion there they appreciate. And then as one becomes more in line with the Sampradaya, then one can appreciate more and more of that. Having stressed that the world is a form of the Lord and thus is non-different from him, a doubt may arise that the material creation, being temporary, can't have the Lord who is spiritual as the source. In order to clear such doubts, the author conclusively showed that the material world does not get absolutely destroyed, but exists in a dormant state even after the palaya, universal destruction, based on the theory of Satkaryavad, which states that the effect is dormant in the cause, right? So the effect is dormant in the cause, and when you see the effect, it's simply a manifestation of that particular quality within the cause. The scriptural statements describing the absolute destruction of creation does not imply the falsity of material creation, but it refers to the destruction of Jiva's illusion. Right? Because that you're giving up when you say the absolute destruction, the final destruction, that means that Jiva gives up his illusion. He stops working under the Ajnana Shakti and starts working under the internal potency, like that. And so then taking turns.
I'm just why sometimes. Sorry.
Oh, I got to stand up. Okay. Yeah, because I see you there. And then you disappear. Then yeah, it gets hard to sit. Because here it's like you don't have the engagement. Like when you're personally sitting, then you're more engaged.
Yeah.
But here, so many things are going on, and
yeah.
In order to clear such doubts, the author conclusively showed that the material world does not get absolutely destroyed. Yes, means what's destroyed, that means the first one is what's constantly going on, right? And the second one will be then, you know, this body to the next like that. The third one will be Brahma's lifetime. And then there'll be another creation. So that constant breathing out, breathing in the Lord, then will be these first three. But the fourth one means the Jiva then destroys his material concept, then he goes back to Godhead. So they'll say, no, but in the fourth stage, the material world's destroyed. No, it's only your illusion of the material world. The material world remains because everybody else is an illusion. Right? You can see how they get, because it's so self-centered, it's about them being God, and that how they can come up with that one Jiva idea, that one Jiva is dreaming all this, you know. Like that. The Lord is dreaming all this, but that's the point. They think I'm the Lord, so therefore the Jiva, dream all this. Yeah. Is it? I think it was it. But Aerosmith, you know, then they mentioned this about dream on, right? Thus, the material creation is a natural Shakti of the Lord or his Amsha. It is never independent of him, and only the devotees who are beyond the gross and subtle coverings of the material energy can perceive this truth. Right? So the devotees, because they are his Amsha, they can see it properly. They can go beyond it. So material nature is beyond. We're beyond. The Lord is beyond. But when we don't see that how everything is connected with the Lord, that's when we have the illusion, and then we have material consciousness. So all it is that, let's say it's like someone's behaving properly, they sit with everybody else. Someone's not behaving properly, they go to their room. That's all. It's just a matter of consciousness. It's not that the room is a different place, than it's still the house. It's just a different feature. Vritti. Having established that the material creation is the natural Shakti of Paramatma, a doubt may arise that, quote, if everything is Brahman because everything is the effect of Brahman, how can the Jivas, portions of Brahman, be covered by Ahankar, the effect of Brahman, which is illusory, right? Because they still want to be God. Like, how can I, if I'm God, how can I be covered? Right? And being covered, how do they become bewildered? A new adhyaya thus commences to clarify all such doubts regarding the supremacy of the Lord and the actual position of the Jiva. Okay. What's the time? 40. We have 5 minutes. You have the new book? I have to get the new book. Okay. So now we're on next, Paramatma Sandarbha, study guide part three, further analysis of the position of the Jiva and the Supreme Lord. Okay, Adhyaya four. Didn't we just have Adhyaya four?
Three, Maharaj. That was Adhikarana four in the Adhyaya
three. Oh, that was Adhyaya three. Okay, Adhikarana four. And now it's Adhyaya four. Okay. So now we have Adhyaya four, Adhikarana three, right? Okay. Adhyaya four, further analysis of the position of the Jiva and the Lord. Then Adhikarana one, Anuchedas 82 to 92, Jiva's entanglement and liberation. Adhikarana two, Anuchedas 93 to 104, the Lord's actions are without hatred or prejudice. Adhikarana three, Anuchedas 105 to 110, Bhagavan establishes the highest aspect of the absolute truth through analysis of Bhagavatam according to the Tatparya Lingus. Right? Because then that brings us naturally, you can see, to Krishna Sandarbha. Right? Because Krishna Sandarbha means the pastimes of the Lord. But now that means you have to establish Bhagavan. Okay, so we've established Bhagavan. But then you have to see his actions are without hatred or prejudice. Otherwise, why are some souls in the pastimes and some are not? Right? And then you have to see how are you going to be able to engage in that? The Jiva has to be beyond entanglement and liberated. What actually is liberation? So when the Jiva is liberated, so now we've discussed before about how they're in the material world and how they have the improper understandings. Now we'll bring about how the Jiva is entangled and how he's liberated. Because otherwise, if he's part and parcel of the Lord, how does he get covered? Right? If he's part and parcel of the Lord doesn't get covered. How can his part and parcel get covered? Right? That's the whole point. That misunderstanding comes up. So then you want to establish how he gets entangled and how he gets liberated. Because it's a matter of consciousness. Right? I mean, otherwise, he's always in the Lord's Shakti like that. And the Shakti is not different from him. So he's always situated in the Lord, as we saw, Paramatma being everything. Everyone and everything is situated in the Lord. But if our consciousness is not there, then it doesn't, we don't move forward nicely. Okay, and then after that, we have the Sri Tattva Sutras, Chapter 2, Chit Padartha Prakarana, Spirit, and Chapter 3, Achit Padartha Prakarana, Matter. Okay. How are we doing?
Yes, Maharaj, the Adhyaya 4 is the last one of the Paramatma Sandarbha.
Yes,
you don't want to do any more? I mean, you don't want to do the next five or six that are there? That you want to stop after this one?
I'm asking. No, if there are more.
Oh, okay. So it's not that it's a okay. Yes, no, this is the last one.
So, Sri Tattva Sutra are another book.
Yes, it means just like you see sometimes that to summarize everything.
Yes.
We'll be taking from another book to give it sometimes we'll be taking from Jiva Dharma because they're nicely summarized of that. So then another book of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this the Tattva Sutras. That then summarizes all this very nicely. Because this has been, you know, very analytically drawn out, giving all the evidences, all the things. So then they'll very nicely, in a concise way, go through the same thing.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So you see is that you have the aspect, because the sutra aspect, much of the time we think, oh, the sutras, you study that first. Then you'll understand. But you won't understand. You get familiar with kind of some of the context and all that, but actually the substance you won't know. Mm-hmm. After studying the work, then the sutras mean something. Does that make sense? Like that. Like I remember I was looking at something like on Arthashastra, you know, it has so many chapters and books and everything like that. And so then, but there's also the Chanakya means the Artha Sutras or something like that. And so then if you look at them, it gives all the knowledge. But the point is, unless you've already studied the knowledge, they won't really mean anything to you. So the point is having studied this whole thing, now studying these Tattva Sutras, now it'll have some meaning. You know, and then the first one was dealing before. So when you see, when we finish the whole Sandarbhas, you'll see that it's summarized in the Tattva Sutras.
Yes.
Right? So in 50 sutras, it's all there.
Yes.
Right? But only having studied it and understood it, now you can see how it all connects and that, and then you can use that framework then to discuss it with others.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Also, okay. Maharaj, mainly it helps us to memorize the whole philosophy very concisely.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But unless it has value or meaning to us, we won't know what to do with it, even if we memorize it. You know, so that's the whole thing, is it has to be able to be practically used.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.